You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What's up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Today is a very good day. Of course, I'm going to have to talk about the Brewers, but I want to let everybody know the incredible show that we've got cooked up for you today, folks. So many interesting things going on, and I've got just the people to talk to about them. Because it is Thursday, I'll be joined by one of the most reasonable men in politics, my friend and yours, Tom Paulswitz, to co-host this first hour of the show. We're going to talk Brewers. We're going to talk Jack Smith, because that makes for some interesting reading. We're going to talk about the vice presidential debate. And most importantly, we're going to be giving you some incredible resources to help you with fact-checking. Objective, independent resources that Tom and I, and Tom found these and shared them with me, and I've been checking them out for the last couple of days. Really impressive. Not only will they help you fact-check what candidates say, it will also help you identify the bias in different media outlets. So you're not going to want to miss that. We will get to that information within this first hour. Tom, don't drop the beans too early. We want everybody hanging on to get that nugget. So that's in the 2 to 3 o'clock hour. Of course, at 3 o'clock, it's Maggie and the Millionaires talking money. Today, I've got John Driscoll. We're going to be talking about why paying people a fair wage, a sustainable wage, an equitable wage, is good for business, not just large corporations, but small businesses too. 3:30, it is Thursday, so I'll be joined by Dr. Kristen Lierley. We're going to talk about the debate that she had last Friday with her opponent. I think she was landing some pretty big punches, and then her opponent looked like a little bit out of water, out of his element, not quite sure why he was there. Yeah, you're not going to want to miss that chit-chat with Dr. Lierley.
Nice.
And then I'll finish up some of my thoughts in the last segment of the day from yesterday, continuing the discussion about the $1.7 billion, with a B, $1 billion that Republicans in the Assembly and Senate refuse to help save Wisconsin taxpayers. They're making us all pay more money, and we could spend less money, nearly $2 billion less, and get better insurance coverage for thousands of Wisconsinites. This is a no-brainer, folks. We set up the facts yesterday with our good friend from the Wisconsin Policy Forum, Jason Stein, their president. But today I'm going to tell you really what's going on behind the scenes there. You're not going to want to miss that last segment of the day. But before we welcome Tom, I do also want to tell everybody that we're helping you if you would like to help the folks that have been victimized by Hurricane Ellen. If you go to civicmedia.us/help, that's civicmedia.us/help, we have a page that will help you select between either the American Red Cross or Samaritan's Purse if you would like to make donations. Again, all of that available at civicmedia.us/help. Certainly, again, a hurricane that has devastated enormous swaths of the Southeast, especially North Carolina, a hurricane by all accounts of biblical proportions. Our hearts go out to the people that are still fighting to get clean water and electricity turned back on. It's just incredible.
Absolutely.
But, welcome, Tom. Thanks so much again for joining us here to co-host.
My pleasure. I just want to say one thing that, you know, Asheville, North Carolina was considered a climate refuge. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you would have thought like their biggest risk was going to be from a hurricane, people would have laughed at you. Right. And here we are today. And that is the case for now. I think there's a whole bunch of communities now that are really looking around going, we need to start thinking about what we're going to do in order to harden ourselves against climate change.
And of course, J.D. Vance on the debate stage Tuesday evening, basically suggesting that climate change isn't a real thing. So we're going to talk about the fact checking from these fact checking resources that I mentioned earlier. And I did a little computation of my own about who told the bigger whoppers and how big are the big whoppers and how important are they? Because basically, folks, it's not just all the same. You know what I mean? Like,
yes, it's not an equivalent. I'd say, Maggie, though, before we get into those that meet, we should really talk Brewers because
we have to, Tom.
You and I both love the Brewers. We both had the same opinion about last night's game. It's just fun to watch. It was fun to watch the young guys really go out there and just rip the cover off the ball. And, you know, and I think it's a plus when you're that young to not understand like the impact of being in the playoffs. Like these guys, they're with the Brewers. The Brewers are always in the playoffs now. And so it's just the playoffs, right? You just keep playing. And then other guys who've been around for a while know how hard it is. And they start to tighten up a little bit and pressure hits them. So it was just fantastic to watch. Jackson Churio is just unbelievable. What a great player. Yeah, and Garrett Mitchell was so nice to see him come back from his injuries and really be the player they thought he was going to be at the beginning of last year. So that's just incredibly exciting.
Yeah, there was so much to be impressed by last night. It was interesting. I knew the day was going well when Detroit beat the Astros because any playoffs where the Astros are gone early and often, I'm a big fan of. They can go kick rocks, right? I mean, like, done with you. Yep. So that was a good sign. And folks, if you've been listening, I've been talking about the fact that when the Brewers make the playoffs, I always take my dad to the playoffs because his birthday is on October 1st. So it's a perfect built-in birthday present. Yeah. And this year it was particularly important because my dad turned 80. So I got to take my dad to the game last night. I was so relieved that it was going to be an evening game. And my dad presciently said before the game that couple of things. One, he remarked on the youth of the team. Two, he said, what you've seen over the course of the season is a Brewers team that can win in a lot of different ways.
Yes.
And that makes a team really playoff ready. He said, sometimes they'll beat you with just lights out pitching, right? Sometimes they'll put together small ball baseball where you're using bunts and the running game to get and scratch for one run. Another run, you know, not the huge hitting. And sometimes they just have massive offensive outings and they'll put together some of these pieces in different combinations. Sometimes it's the starting pitcher. Sometimes it's the relievers, right? He was talking about that. And then he turned to talk about Bryce Turang, who had a terrible batting average last season.
Yes.
And he said, Bryce went into the offseason and said, I'm going to relearn how to hit. And he now has one of the fastest swings. It's a really compact swing in the major leagues. And he has been an absolute rock in the Brewers lineup. And his first two at-bats yesterday, he went 2-for-2 as an exhibit of that. My dad also mentioned what you just did, Tom, that Garrett Mitchell, how great to see him back in the lineup, getting some minutes, right, in that DH slot, sometimes subbing when we had Sal Frelick injured.
Yes.
But to have come back from his injuries and what had to be for him heartbreaking disappointment to not fulfill his potential, and then to see him have that incredible outing. And basically all of the stuff that my dad was saying before the game, I was like, you should do commentary, Dad, because we then sat down and watched all of it happen in the game. Now, here's a little bit of baseball nerdy trivia for you. This is the first wild card series, because remember, it used to be a single game.
Yes.
This is the first wild card series ever that has gone to three games.
Three games. Yep.
The first one. Yeah. So, Tom, before we got on air, I think you were promising some strawberry blended margaritas and a pool sit as we prepare for the game. Folks, that's Tom Paulswitz, one of the most reasonable guys in politics. He co-hosts with me here every Thursday from 2 to 3 o'clock. I'll be watching the game and hopefully won't actually lose my voice. I tried to avoid talking like all morning because I was noticeably hoarse when I got up. Yes. The last observation I'll make is this. I went to the game with my dad and a few other friends, and we were sitting right together. And there were, of course, the Churio home run in the first inning, first at bat, bang, to tie the ball game. And in the eighth inning, the Churio home run that set the table to then have the put-ahead runs from Garrett Mitchell and his two-run home run. We were sitting in section 206 way out on the right field line, so we got to watch those home runs drop. Yeah. You know, with it felt like you could reach out and touch the ball. But here was the best thing. The unmitigated shared collective joy. Like, there is a beautiful thing that happens, and it only happens a bit when you're at home, but when you're actually spectating in sports, like, there were five of us literally with our arms around each other, like, jumping up and down like little kids, screaming and yelling, nearly in tears with all of the joy and excitement. And those collective moments, they're so connecting, and it, yes. You know, sports does, it brings folks together, right?
Brings people together, makes them realize how important it is to have a commonality. But I agree with you. It was just so fun to watch. And I think that the bigger thing is, you know, win or lose today, I think there's a lot going for the Brewers. They'll probably lose Adames, but they'll get Yelich back. But there's a lot going on. And I think the biggest thing, and if you look back now, they've been in the playoffs, what, how many years out of the last, how many years? They now have a playoff mindset.
Yes.
Which is very hard to build. And now that you've built it, they have a way to keep continuing it, because now the expectation is so much. It's so high and it's so there that these young guys that's what we do. We go to the playoffs.
Unlike the Royals-Orioles matchup, I was like, wait a minute, the Royals and the Orioles are in the play? Like, what? I don't even know what's going on with that. Right. Yeah.
Yes.
It was just an amazing outing. It's one that my dad and I will, I think, remember forever. Wonderful. Just some of those moments seared into your head. Happy birthday, Dad. I love you. When we come back, Tom and I are going to delve into this 165-page tome that just dropped from Jack Smith in the Trump criminal prosecution for the riot and insurrection on January 6th. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. My co-host today is Tom Paulsiewicz, two-time congressional candidate. Keep it locked. So much more to come here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm telling these tears going fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flame. Welcome back, Wisconsin, or welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm going to keep calling this out because, listen, folks in the southeastern corridor of this country are in dire need. If you'd like to pitch in and help, you got a couple of extra bucks and you're not sure where to go with it, we've got links to both the American Red Cross and Samaritan's Purse at civicmedia.us/help. Again, that's civicmedia.us/help if you'd like to check that out. Also, we're always here to help you, the voters. We've got the 2024, I would call it, totally comprehensive State Assembly and Senate Voter Guide. It's everything you needed to know and need to know to be the best voter you can be and to see your values come to life at the ballot box on November 5th. That voter guide, again, this is focused on those state races. Sometimes the people that you may not know a whole lot about, not so many ads and text messages and all the stuff that you see. This is meant to be a resource. Every interview of any of the candidates on our network, those are all linked in our voter guide. If you want to go check that out, just go to civicmedia.us/voter guide. Again, that's civicmedia.us/voter guide. My co-host this hour. Love having him because he's one of the most reasonable men in politics. His name's Tom Paulswitz, Navy veteran, small business owner, and two-time candidate for Congress. Tom, as a reasonable guy, and also, very importantly, as not a lawyer, because sometimes, yes, you know, my lawyering gets ahead of me.
Yes.
I know you've had a little bit of time to take a look, at least at a high level, at the filing made by Jack Smith yesterday. This is Jack Smith's filing, folks, if you're not watching 24 hours a day news. Jack Smith is the federal special prosecutor assigned to prosecute Donald Trump, both with respect to the super secret spy documents case, the national security case that has been, I hope, just paused for now in Florida. Yes. But also, of course, Jack Smith is the special counsel assigned to prosecute former President Donald Trump with respect to the January 6th insurrection, coup d'etat, if you will, and the big lie that Donald Trump and all of his co-conspirators spread about the 2020 election. And you all likely recall that the Supreme Court about 2-3 months ago declared that as to some matters, presidents are completely immune, and as to certain other matters, presidents are presumptively immune. That meant that the case was going to go back down to the trial court, and Jack Smith, as a prosecutor, was going to have to determine if he was going to proceed with the case at all, given the Supreme Court's rulings, and if so, which factual allegations and alleged crimes could continue, given that the Supreme Court basically declared presidents kings as to certain types of official actions, as relevant to the Jack Smith insurrection prosecution, that largely had to deal with Donald Trump's discussions with his Department of Justice lawyers, as well as his White House counsel. In other words, the only acts that can proceed to a criminal trial for the former presidents are acts that Jack Smith can either obviously point to as being for Donald Trump's personal benefit that he was doing as a private citizen, or where he can show enough facts that that is the inference which is reasonably drawn. It's a little bit of a dance, a little tightrope, but what Jack Smith did, which you may not be aware of or may have forgotten, is he actually reconvened a new grand jury, and he had them indict the president basically fresh, anew. It's called the superseding indictment. And after doing that, Judge Chutkan, who is the judge overseeing this case in the D.C. Circuit Courts, asked for both Jack Smith to first explain why the Supreme Court's immunity decision does not preempt or effectively prohibit the prosecution under the new superseding indictment to proceed. And then after Jack Smith would file that, then, of course, Donald Trump's team of defense lawyers will have an opportunity to respond. And then the judge will make her ruling as to whether or not the case can proceed, given the Supreme Court's declaration that presidents are kings as to some set of actions. That was the motion. That was the argument that Jack Smith filed yesterday, saying our entire superseding indictment and all of the facts alleged therein can proceed, and here is why. It's 165 pages. I have a number of observations, both as a nerdy lawyer, but also as just a voter and American citizen. But I wanted to let you, Tom, tell people what you thought of this upon your high-level review.
Yeah, great setup. I think there's a lot to it. A couple of takeaways that I had immediately were a lot of the things that were known but not verified are now verified. So the whole timeline, from basically pre-election to all the way up to January 6th and somewhat beyond, it really proves that Trump knew that he had lost the election, and therefore he knew that he was lying. So, which I think was very important to prove, because then it states intent. And I think that the other part of this to me was he did a very good job of making sure that the charges are against Donald Trump, the candidate, not Donald Trump, the president. that these were official campaign acts, that even the January 6th rally was not paid for. It was, you know, I love that he said that they didn't play Hail to the Chief at that rally. They actually played different music because it wasn't a presidential rally. It was a candidate rally. And so therefore he put all that together. And now it's up to, I think, the next step to say, okay, this falls outside of the Supreme Court immunity ruling. But the next part is it's obvious that he was coordinating and he was committing crimes.
Yeah, it's a pretty comprehensive recitation of the federal government's criminal case against Donald Trump for attempting to overthrow our democracy and halt the peaceful transition of power. We're going to get some of my thoughts, more of the conversation with Tom. Folks, your input is, of course, welcome. What are your thoughts about Jack Smith's filing and this case overall? 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. We'll be back in just a moment and dig into these 165 pages. Y'all aren't going to want to miss some of my wonky hot takes. We'll be back in just a moment here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Listen, I wouldn't want to be running from Jack Smith. That guy knows how to lawyer. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. Here on the Civic Media Radio Network, I'm joined this hour by my very special Thursday co-host, Tom Paulswitz, a two-time congressional candidate in Wisconsin's 5th Congressional District. I mentioned Jack Smith because he dropped an absolute bomb yesterday in the criminal case proceeding in district court in D.C. against Donald Trump. It is a comprehensive recitation of facts. All of these facts, obviously supported by either direct evidence, documentary evidence, or direct testimony, because he can't allege the facts unless he can prove them. And most of this stuff is readily provable. Tom, before the break, we were just getting into some of your thoughts. Before I give a couple of my takes to get your reactions, any further comments you wanted to make on those 165 pages? And I thought the fact that you highlighted was really important at a couple of these rallies where he was spreading disinformation. He's not standing at a podium with the presidential seal on it. He's not walking out to the presidential Hail to the Chief. It was just a plain old podium with Trump Pence on it, and he was walking out to other music. In other words, these weren't presidential or official acts. These were private acts.
Yes, and I think the most telling thing that came from the new indictment is that Donald Trump followed through on what he told us he was going to do.
Yep.
He basically said in the beginning that, you know, in that summer of the election, he said, I will wait to see what happens to determine if it was a free and fair election.
Yeah,
and even though it was a free and fair election, he decided that he was going to do everything in his power to still sit in that seat come January 21st in the inaugural. So, and I think it came down, and to me, the stark reality of this, it came down to one person, and that one person was Mike Pence, and that's why Mike Pence wasn't at the debate the other night, because Mike Pence wouldn't do Donald Trump's bidding.
Yes. A couple of observations in no particular order. The first is I've heard some on the right wing commentary, like raising all holy hell about I've got my presidential countdown clock up all the time. We're 32 days, 10 hours and 22 right. minutes away from the presidential election. Right. They're saying, oh, foul. It's too close to the election. Dear right wing commentariat, it's 30 days out from the election and Jack Smith is presenting this because your guy made it that way. He wanted to be declared king. He got his wish. This is the process. And he needs to be treated like every other defendant in the country. And frankly, part of the speedy trial requirement is as much to benefit and protect the rights of defendants as it is to ensure the public's right to have people brought to trial quickly so that we can see the evidence presented against them. I've said all along, if I were in Donald Trump's shoes and truly believed in my innocence and that the evidence would prove it, I would have gone to trial ASAP after these things were filed. So that's observation one. The timing objection is garbage. The second one is Donald Trump is getting an incredible advantage here. It is highly unusual that a prosecutor would effectively lay out their entire case in chief before the case. And that now defendants are entitled to see all evidence that may be introduced against them at trial, but not effectively the theory, the story of the case, who they may use, who a prosecutor may use to try to prove certain evidentiary points that are necessary predicates to the criminal charges. This is unusual. So Donald Trump gets this massive advantage from being, in effect, able to read these 165 pages like all of us have, which is a blueprint of the case. And by the way, we will put the link to the Jack Smith filing in today's show notes so you can go there and read it yourself. I think it's worthy of every citizen's time to take a read on this document. You can find that at civicmedia.us. But consider this, and I'm going to talk about a couple of the facts that popped out to me. There is an incredible volume of facts and related legal inferences that we will never likely see because the Supreme Court acted to shield Donald Trump when it declared presidents kings as to a certain set of actions. So this is not the entirety of the evidence. There is likely so much more. Specifically, the notes that Don McGahn, the former White House counsel, took in countless meetings where McGahn was trying to dissuade the president and his campaign from engaging in these blatant falsehoods. So Donald Trump has gotten an advantages that no other defendants have in literally the history of our criminal justice system. So I wanted to make note of that.
And Maggie, I'll just jump in ahead, to make sure people understand that is an incredibly important point you just made, that this is the tip of the iceberg, but also by releasing all this information, it just shows you that Jack Smith is absolutely certain that this is a winning case because he's just exactly what you said. He's given the entire playbook for the trial right over to the defendant and said, all right, go ahead, prove me wrong.
Yeah, beat me in court.
Yes.
Folks, that's the voice of Tom Paulswitz, my very favorite special co-host on Thursdays from 2 to 3 p.m. So those were my first two observations. The third is, it is a clinic in what good legal writing should be, which is basic and straightforward. There is one paragraph of introduction. Then there is a section that goes through the relevant facts. There is a section that explains the law. The third section then applies the law to those facts. And then fourthly and finally, Jack Smith asks the court for certain relief or to take certain actions. It is extremely straightforward. There is little to zero. I was trying to find editorializing, coloring of conduct, sort of filling in the blanks. There is none. Now, yes, does it present a damning portrait of Donald Trump as a clear criminal who tried to overthrow our Republican democracy? Yes. But it does so by relying on evidence. And for those of you who may be listening that are conservative or inclined to believe Donald Trump, and we'll get to more of this with respect to the vice presidential debate, please read this document and understand the difference between baloney, filler, and editorial, and when a prosecutor or someone running for office can simply rely on the facts. And you cannot claim, you cannot retort that by saying, oh, they're just making that up, or oh, that's just how they're interpreting it. No, it is the facts, direct testimony and documentary evidence, meaning text messages, the president's tweets, etc., that make the case. And I want us all to understand that this is how it's supposed to be.
Yes. And Maggie, I'm going to jump in with one more observation. Please. I also think that the result of this 165-page document is it makes it much harder, even if Donald Trump wins, to brush it under the rug.
Yes.
Because it is so solid. It is so clear that it will be hard to get someone internally from the government to say, we're no longer going to do this because the evidence speaks for itself.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, in a way, tactically, by doing this in this very direct way, Jack Smith is also saying, I dare you.
Yes.
Meet me in court. Let's actually try this case, you chicken. Stop going to your bought and paid for justices in the corrupt Supreme Court. Meet me in a court of law. Let's actually argue about evidence because I will beat you. I agree with your take on that 100%, Tom. Now, there were a couple of facts, and I haven't gotten through the whole thing because I like to read slow. I like to get all of it in. But a couple of facts that I wanted to point out. And folks, if you have reactions, thoughts, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Here are a couple of these. They make it very clear, this is basically pages 5 through 7, that Donald Trump was told by every meaningful high-level campaign advisor this was going to be a nail-biter, that he was going to look like he was winning, and that the absentee ballots would start to get counted, and then the vote counts would swing. Why? Because they had talked down mail-in ballots. And so it was expected, and it certainly was proven to be, that more Biden supporters used mail-in voting because we were in the midst of a freaking pandemic that was ended up killing over 1 million Americans. So he knew that, he was advised of that. And at that time, which was in like late August, early September, he said, we're not worried about that. We're just going to declare victory. And he repeated this over and over and over again. And it is further evidenced because some of his top surrogates in his campaign, in closed door meetings with Republicans in certain states, repeated this. We're just going to claim victory as before all the votes are counted, and we're going to keep doing that. So they already had the plot, the conspiracy to lie. I think that's made very clear. As soon as those votes started to come in and the outcome was clear, his key top-level campaign staff told him, you've lost. They conceded their court case in Arizona. He had to win Arizona to win. This was on November frickin' 14th, right? Like, yes. Within the month, everybody told him, you've lost. They conceded the case in Arizona. He knew he had lost. And yet, right? Yes. And yet, they just went out there and kept lying, one, and two, he fired all of those people. On November 14th, Donald Trump cleared house and he tweeted about it. Again, yeah. Jack Smith doesn't have to make it up. He tweeted, he fired all these people who told him he lost. And he started to buy into the Kraken Lady and Rudy Giuliani, I'll stand outside the Four Seasons with my dripping Grecian formula. These people that had no evidence and frankly no business making these arguments because they were completely out of their depth. And oh, by the way, those were all privately hired attorneys, not any of his lawyers that he received counsel from as president. So he fired the people that told him he lost. He knew he had lost. And it goes from there. A really interesting section. Again, if you're conservatives listening, maybe just read pages 12 to 14. Because what's on pages 12 to 14 is a quick bullet-pointed recounting of all of the times that Mike Pence talked to Donald Trump and told him he lost. And it's not just Mike Pence's testimony, which we would be guaranteed to see at trial. Mike Pence took notes on these meetings, and they are summarized at pages 12 to 14. Mike Pence, no friend to progressives, right? Like, Mike Pence knew that this guy was up to no good, and he took notes. Again, summarized at pages 12 to 14. Pages 14 to 15, he was overheard on a campaign airplane talking to his kids saying, it doesn't matter if you win or lose, you just have to keep fighting. Meaning it doesn't matter what the outcome is. It's all the same stuff over and over. Another small fact that I thought incredibly persuasive, wherever they were challenging count numbers or claiming that people who weren't entitled to vote or dead people were voting, whatever it was, the numbers changed every day. And Jack Smith summarizes all the different numbers that they floated out there. When you're making up the numbers and they have a swing from 32,000 to over 250,000 dead people voting in Georgia, that tells you that they don't have any evidence that it was all made up garbage. And if that wasn't enough, when questioned by state officials in Arizona and Georgia, they admitted on the phone, we don't have any evidence. That goes through pages 22 to page 30. And I'll just quote this last one. When pressed by Georgia officials about that videotape of the counting, the Secretary of State said it doesn't show that there were any irregularities. Watch the whole tape. And Donald Trump basically said, I don't want to watch the whole tape. I've got, quote, better tape. Yeah. When we come back, we are going to dig into the vice presidential debate with my special co-host, Tom Paulsiewicz. We're going to give you these fact check websites. They're amazing. And we're going to fact check the VP debate because, listen, it ain't equivalent wise. It just ain't. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn, joined by my fabulous co-host, two-time congressional candidate, Tom Paulsiewicz. To close out the hour, we needed to bookend and talk about the VP debate, but not just to talk about the VP debate on Tuesday, Tom. You shared with me some really powerful fact-check resources that anybody can use. Folks, we're going to put those links in our show notes. We'll give them to you before the end of the segment. But I went and checked out these resources for their fact check of the debate, and I made a list and I checked it twice to find out who was naughty and nice on Tuesday afternoon. I wanted to get your thoughts on these fact checking resources and on the debate from a fact checked perspective.
Yeah, I just think from a debate perspective, you know, theoretically the debate rules were that the moderators weren't going to fact check, and of course, J.D. Vance was very upset when he was fact-checked, and I just think it's fantastic that was one of the defining moments, is one of the candidates being upset that they were being called out for lying. And, you know, I was talking to somebody about this the other day after the debate, is he has really got lying down to an art. Yes. And when you look at him, he is a very smooth liar. And my question to the person I was talking to is, how is that useful and beneficial in his job? You know, because I understand how it's useful when it comes to running a campaign, especially when you're dealing with people who don't know the facts. But how is that skill useful on the world stage or within the confines of the United States and just negotiating with people and trying to get things done? Can you imagine walking up to somebody knowing they're a tremendous liar?
Yes.
And that's the person you're going to be working with to find common ground to solve problems. To me, it's great in a campaign, but it has no place in office.
Yeah. It's makes you unqualified to take the job.
Absolutely.
So I do want to give people effectively my credits and debits. I literally did columns and characterized or tried to quantify the seriousness of the lie, whether or not it actually was a lie. So let's just start with the brass tacks here. Again, we're going to give you these resources to do fact-checking yourself, finding out about which media outlets are biased versus not. All that, we'll give that to you before we're out of this hour. J.D. Vance told 11 lies. Now, again, they're sort of grouping these into fairly large chunks, but 11 lies. In contrast, while they list 8 lies for Tim Walz, upon further inspection of the, quote, fact-checking, 2 aren't really lies because the thing that they rely upon to fact-check Tim Walz is a statement by Donald Trump to the contrary. The first one is, I'm going to protect IVF, and the second one is Project 2025 isn't my thing. And those are lies by Donald Trump. So, like, you can't fact-check Tim Walz based on Donald Trump's obvious lies. So exactly. Those 2 go out the windows. Now we're down to 6. Then there were 3 that they claimed fact checks of Tim Walz on things that I would consider to be basically immaterial and typical political rhetoric. One was about what percentage of the wall Donald Trump built. In the end of the day, nobody cares. 2, whether or not pre-existing conditions would lose presumed coverage if Donald Trump succeeded in his desire to remove the ACA. Walz said they would be, without qualifying that employer plans don't boot people for pre-existing conditions.
Right.
That's not the point. And then there was another detail that didn't make any of no consequence. So that's 3 more down. So we're down from 8 now to 3. The next one was basically a characterization of statistics that they took issue with. That one doesn't count, so that goes out the window. You were left with 2, basically, from Tim Walz that had some substance to them. And actually, one of them was about Donald Trump tax dodging, which let's just assume that doesn't really matter for the purposes of national policymaking. So you're down to 1. And it was the fact that Tim Walz talked about border crossings being down. And that's in a relative comparison of a shorter period of time. And he didn't talk about the big picture. Again, it wasn't even a lie. It was a characterization. I think Tim Walz and Kamala Harris should deal with this one much more square on. Talk about the explosion in border crossings and deal with it directly. Rely on the border bill that was the strongest bill that we've seen in 25 years that Donald Trump killed. All told, 0 actual lies by Tim Walz on the debate stage.
Right.
Contrast that with the 11 from Vance, and I characterize every single one of them as a big deal, largely trading in racism and fear. All of them big lies. He lied about climate change. He lied about killing babies. He lied about immigration. He lied about housing. He lied about health care that Donald Trump has stated repeatedly he wants to repeal the Affordable Care Act. He lied about inflation. He has basically lied about everything. And the biggest, fattest, most terrible lie was the lie that he told about democracy, saying Trump told his supporters on January 6th to, quote, protest peacefully.
But he did it so smoothly.
Yeah. A snake oil salesman in an Ivy League suit bought by billionaire tech bros. No, thank you. Tom, thank you so very much. Folks, that's Tom Paulswitz, my co-host on Thursdays. We're going to come back with Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, why fair wages are good for businesses, both large and small. Keep it locked. News, weather, and sports are next here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.